So a couple of things I just want to emphasize. So I think, you all, excuse me, hopefully everybody here voted yes on ballot measure two. And you all know that the bill went into effect on February 24th. And that, on February 24th, the laws actually did change with regard to personal cultivation, personal possession. So, you know, we can have up to 6 plants in our homes, totally legal. If you got a neighbor who's a cop, you know, trooper, invite them over to enjoy your plants if, you know, if you're so inclined. I'm not recommending, I'm just saying you could legally. You can have up to 1 ounce of marijuana on your possession. You can gift that to somebody as long as no money exchanges hands. Totally legal activity. That's all personal, though. None of it is commercial. And that's why I just want to emphasize this. This is all largely about the commercial industry. And that's kind of where, you know, we're not, that's not our exclusive focus, but that's like the next big milestone. And that's really not going to happen until February of next year or sometime maybe slightly sooner. And I told the guys, I always try and emphasize that February 24th, 2017 date, because that is in fact the day where under our Constitution, the legislature can pull the plug on the entire thing. They don't really need a reason to do it unless they want to get reelected. So there is that. You know, it's important to remember that, you know, 150,000 of us did vote for this thing, and our elected officials recognize that that's an enormous voting block. And whether they like it or not, their constituents have spoken. And to be perfectly fair, our legislators, of the 60 elected officials down in Juneau, most of them have done a pretty fair, diligent job of seeing this thing executed properly. So I just want to make sure everybody appreciates that. We've been working really closely with all of them for this entire legislative session. And they're doing, with a couple of exceptions, they're doing a really good job to make this thing happen for us. So, which brings me to these bills. I have never watched gavel to gavel as much as I did the last 100 days or so, and frankly, I'm thrilled that the legislative session is over. I'll just give you a quick overview of what they were looking at. The legislature, under the terms of ballot measure two, there was really nothing that they had to do. Specifically, they had the option of creating a dedicated marijuana control board, which is something that we were really pushing for. We felt that it was important to have a separate board that could focus on marijuana regulations without all the baggage that came with alcohol regulation. There was another function, though, a very important function of the legislature that, frankly, I had not really anticipated, and that was bringing all the criminal statutes into line with the terms of this ballot initiative. Because basically, we, the people, said marijuana is legal now. Calibrate accordingly. Well, they needed to. They needed to bring a lot of the criminal statutes into line because, you know, certainly, you know, possession, personal cultivation, those things have changed. So any criminal statute that refers to those needs to be adjusted accordingly. That hasn't happened yet, mainly because it was too big a task for them to deal with. The legislature got mired down in a lot of details. We worked really diligently to educate them and try and guide them the right way, and we made a lot of progress. But ultimately, the so-called criminal bill, SB 30, went through a number of variations and finally stalled out in House Judiciary. It'll be back next year, so those statutes are going to get recalibrated. You want to add anything on that, or I'll just keep rolling here.
Yeah, I could add something to the criminal bill. One thing that was really interesting about the legislature was that the criminal bill looked like it was shaping up to be something that we could really work with, and it looked like it was going in quite a fine direction. The interesting thing about the legislature is they don't always agree with one another, and so it flip-flopped a couple times between something that we could really get on board with as a community and as an industry and something that we really couldn't. And so that's something that we've stressed throughout the entire legislative session. It's very important for you as constituents of these various legislators to contact them and speak with them about how you feel the cannabis community should affect you, or the cannabis industry should affect you and your community, because when they talk with one another and make decisions about the various aspects of this bill, they will ultimately listen to what you have to say. They might not completely agree, but it'd be fantastic if we could get all these people on the same page so there's not as much infighting. That's one of the reasons why we didn't pass any of these bills except for one, was because the legislature couldn't agree with themselves. So we need to have an active, unified voice during the legislative session and contacting these people and telling them to due diligence, work with one another, and get on board with amendments to these bills that, that everyone can agree on and actually pass.
Well, one thing, I'll just back up a couple of steps here and let you know. We're going to kind of give you the overview and let you know what we've been doing, and then we're going to throw it open to questions. So if you got questions, you know, just make note of those, and we'll definitely get back to you, because this is a huge topic. We're just giving you the Reader's Digest version right now. Senate Bill 30, the so-called criminal bill, that one went through so many permutations. It was really quite interesting to be involved with. The first version was an absolute train wreck. If you were following this closely, basically that criminal bill said, you know what, marijuana is not really legal. It's going to remain illegal, but we're going to give you some arguments to present in court after they arrest you and confiscate everything in sight and drag you into court. We're going to give you an affirmative defense to get out of actually going to prison. And we scream bloody murder. We're like, no, that's not the way it's going to go. And to be fair, virtually every observer involved had the same reaction. And many of the legislators did too. As soon as that bill came out, they got the negative backlash. They're kind of like, okay, that was a bad idea. We need to regroup. The next version of that bill that Senate Judiciary came up with was an outstanding piece of legislation, or at least it showed great promise. And what it did, the significant thing was, it descheduled marijuana. That was huge. No other state has attempted that yet. That's where Senate Judiciary went with this, and that showed tremendous promise. We're pretty excited about it. Then Senate Finance got a hold of it and changed it entirely. And we beat them up in the media over that one. I'm pretty sure I'm off of Pete Kelly's Christmas list at this point. That's fine. I'm sure he's a nice guy, at least his family. Anyway,
I don't even know if he's a nice guy.
I'm being generous. But, you know, the important thing, and I'm describing this not to be, you know, overly flippant about it, but I'm describing the dynamic because we brought focus to that issue. And through, you know, through us, through the CRCL and other organizations, there was a lot of interested parties there. We shined a really bright floodlight of rationality on what they were trying to do, and we just made it caustic for them to move forward. In fact, it was so awkward for the Senate at that point that they basically sat on the bill for 2 weeks while they figured out what to do next. And when they finally moved that bill out of Senate Finance, they passed it off to the, well, they brought it to the Senate floor kind of with the proviso that, okay, we realize we kind of messed up there, and if that amendment just goes away. Oh, actually, I'm sorry, let me back up and explain what that amendment was. There was an amendment added to Senate Finance that basically would have made all extracts and edibles illegal on February 24th, 2017. That date that I pointed to earlier, that is the first day at which, under our Constitution, the legislature can make substantive changes to this ballot initiative. So they were going to basically put what I characterized as a legislative time bomb with a two-year fuse into that bill, so that on February 24th, most of the industry would just die because it would become illegal. And in fact, it would die before that because none of us would go into business knowing that 8 months later, our entire business model would crumble under us. So that was their plan. It was actually a good plan from their perspective, but we just made it very, very awkward for them to proceed. So they sat on the bill for a couple of weeks. They finally brought it up. They passed it out of that committee with the acknowledgement that if that amendment went away, they weren't going to fight it. So it went to the Senate floor, and the amendment was reintroduced, but it failed 16-4. So it's important because that kind of tells us where the Senate was on that issue. I think that they get the fact that we can have a rational discussion about reasonable things like dosing and labeling and marketing and things like that, but when it comes to actually train wrecking the entire initiative, we're going to take issue with it. So. So Senate Bill 30, finally, it went through a couple more variations. It stalled out in House Judiciary. It's probably going to come back next session. There's a couple more bills. The so-called regulatory bill, Senate Bill 62, was intended to kind of create some boundaries for how the industry would operate. That one didn't get very far, and frankly, I'm glad it didn't, because it's our hope that the regulatory process, which is now underway, will sort of educate that process. We would hope that after November 24th, when the final rules come out, then the legislature will get another crack at it, and they'll look at the rules and go, all right, we can live with that. We don't need to have a bill. That's our hope. And it's more than just a hope. We'll come back and talk a little bit about why that's a little bit closer to an expectation, really. HB 59 was an effort to ban all edibles and concentrates. That one, I don't know that it's going to go anywhere because we made that one so caustic or so toxic that I'm not sure that anybody would vote for it at this point. I mean, it was an early effort to shut down the entire industry by banning edibles and concentrates, and I'm hoping that one will never come back. The Muni Bill, HB 75, that one actually, that's one that we didn't necessarily support, but we weren't really opposed to it. What that was an effort on the part of House Rep Kathy Tilton to address specific concerns that various local governments had brought forward. For example, law enforcement was concerned. They said, okay, the ballot measure says you can have 6 plants. What if there's 2 adults in the home? Does that mean you can have 12, or is it still 6? What if there's 3 adults? Is it now 18? We don't know. So they needed some guidance from the legislature on what was actually lawful in that situation. And there was a lot of discussion. By the way, the last version of the bill stipulated 24 plants per household, assuming there are 4 adults, 21 and over, living in the household. I mean, it wasn't carte blanche to have a mini grow in your house lawfully. That's not what it was intended for. One version of HB 75 included a reference to marijuana clubs. That was brought forward by a couple of communities. Anchorage was reluctant to have them. Fairbanks North Star Borough wants them. So we've got some differing perspectives on this from different communities, and we'll talk about that specifically. But again, 75 was an effort to just kind of statewide define what some of these things were, whether they were lawful, whether they were not, and what the parameters were. In the end, HB 75 died in the Senate floor. The last week of the session, it failed 10-10, which is almost unheard of. And that kind of tells you about how, Frank was talking about how, the different committees within the legislature don't always agree with each other. That was played out for us on the Senate floor. And I think there was a lot of anxiety that night. I could tell you there was, because I was there. We were having little impromptu meetings at 10 o'clock at local bars to try and figure out, what do we do now? In the end, that bill was referred back to Senate Rules because they realized they couldn't bring it back forward. They couldn't pass it. They couldn't kill it. So anyway, okay. House Bill 123, that was the one that created a marijuana control board, a dedicated marijuana control board, which is what we were after all along because we felt that we needed a dedicated group focused on these regs. That one passed. The governor signed it into law about 3 weeks ago. You want to talk about the makeup of that board?
Yeah, so the marijuana control board is going to be a 5-member board. It's going to have one individual from public safety, one individual from public health, one individual from rural Alaska, which I think is actually really important because even though they don't represent a huge percentage of our population, it's a vast area of our state that at least needs one representative because the rural communities work so differently than our municipal communities. There's also 2 possible industry seats, one dedicated industry seat and one industry/public seat. Our organization would hope that both of those seats are filled by marijuana industry or marijuana activist individuals. That way, we will at least have a unified and a powerful voice within the marijuana control board. So it won't just be one person of 5. We'll actually have 2. So we would never have a majority vote, but at least there would be a presence there. And the board of the CRCL has all applied for at least one of those industry seats. We feel that if an organization that has been there since the beginning of the campaign that is focused on looking out for the best interests of the cannabis community actually holds one of those seats, then no longer are we just an intermediary gathering information from you, the cannabis community, and taking it to the legislators and hoping to have an ear. We'll actually have a one single voice in making the regulation. So when you guys call our office and say, hey, this is what I want to see, we can actually take that to those meetings. And so I believe there's, about 150 applicants total
for
the board?
I think 130 as of last Friday when they closed the application process.
So, yes, it's about 130 applicants for these 5 spots. And they're actually looking like they're going to be able to roll out a pretty efficient timeline. The first interviews happen on Monday here in Anchorage, and then I believe shortly after they'll be doing interviews in Fairbanks, and then not too long after that they'll be doing some interviews in the rural areas. So hopefully before summer comes, we'll actually have a board and we'll start to be working on these rules and regulations that they tried to work on in the legislature, because ultimately a dedicated board is going to be better at hammering that out, because there's just less people to fight about it. You know, a five-person board, rumor is that most of the hardcore prohibitionists have been weeded out of the process. That's not an official statement, but I think that the formation of the board is going to be largely supportive of our industry. You know, 53% of Alaskans did vote for this thing. So I think we'll actually be able to have a pretty efficient board. It's going to be a hybrid. You know, originally we lobbied to have a completely separate board, and the formation is actually going to be the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and the Marijuana Control Board are both going to be housed under Cynthia Franklin's department. She's going to remain the executive director of both departments. And at first we were a little cautious about having the executive director of the ABC over the Marijuana Control Board, but she's been surprisingly supportive and has really wanted to see this thing happen. I think she just wants to do a good job. She doesn't seem like a crazy prohibitionist, and so I think that she's actually going to do diligence to make sure that the board works effectively and that we actually get the rules written in time.
I would just add, I've talked to Cynthia Franklin a lot. She's a former prosecutor here in Anchorage. I don't know that I would say necessarily she's an advocate for the industry, but she's very rational, and she's committed to seeing this done right. And I would add that the day after the election, she understood the subtleties and the intricacies of what we're faced with better than any of our legislators do today. I mean, she was dialed in, and she had only been on the job 2 months at that point. So she's committed to seeing this done right. So I'm really looking forward to working with her, whether one of us is on the board or not. Hopefully, we'll have a voice in that process. She's pretty motivated to do this right. Oh, whoops, there we go. Okay, so talk about the timeline. As a default, under the terms of the ballot initiative, the regulatory process falls to the Alcohol Control Board. They had their last meeting about 3 weeks ago, and at that time, I believe the bill to create a marijuana control board had passed, the governor had not yet signed it, and certainly there was no board in place. So the Alcohol Control Board convened. They spent one day on alcohol, spent the next day entirely on marijuana. They did pass one emergency regulation that has to do with public consumption, and that might be something we'll kind of circle back and talk about a little later, because it relates to the marijuana clubs and so forth. But she also laid out a timeline, and she is committed to the November 24 deadline that was defined in the ballot initiative, and she laid out a plan whereby we would achieve that. So basically, they're going to roll out the regs in three packets. The first one was a fairly light packet that was introduced that day. It will come back for consideration on July 3rd. Hopefully, we'll have the Marijuana Control Board seated by then, so they'll have an opportunity to review the details of the packet. They'll take some public testimony on it, and then they'll decide if they want to accept those regs as is, or if they want to make some changes to them based on testimony that they receive. And at that point, they'll introduce packet number two. And I believe, if I understand correctly, the first packet was basically dealt with the procedures associated with the local option, smaller communities opting out of all things marijuana. It was kind of a slow pitch. You know, it was kind of a get started slow thing, not overly controversial, and really it's just establishes the rules for that process similar to the opt out provisions for alcohol. So fairly non-controversial. We'll probably expect some public input, but nothing to get too worked up over. The second packet is expected to deal with the regulatory requirements for testing facilities, and maybe a couple of others. So it's anticipated that those kinds of facilities will be the first ones to be granted permits. The third packet will be everything else, basically grow operations, processing, retail stores. That's the one that a lot of us are really going to be focused on. And by then, it's expected that the Marijuana Control Board will be in place. They are looking at a deadline of November 24th to adopt those final rules. Um, let's see here. Yeah, okay, so that's, I think that's all we got to say on that. Okay, so, you want
to... Yeah, so the CRCL wants your thoughts. What has made this organization so successful isn't a handful of guys in suits and ties getting up and talking. It's been the fact that everything that we've taken forward has come from you. And since we started this, that's the platform that we built the organization on is you know, we could be a Johnny-come-lately organization and go and rant and rave to the legislature and the rulemakers, but they ultimately ask, okay, well, who are you? What do you represent? Do you represent a special interest? Do you represent yourselves? Do you represent the people? And we can say, yes, we do represent the people. We represent the cannabis community here in Alaska, and we've strived this entire time since 2013 to not only build our membership, which is free, by the way, but to listen to the membership. You know, when you join the CRCL, what you get is the opportunity to have your individual voice heard. You can write us an email. You can call our office phone. You can participate in the biweekly conference calls. And through that, we take the collective of the cannabis community's thoughts and ideas for how they think the industry should affect them, and we take that forward. And then when these legislators and rulemakers ask us, okay, well, who are you? Say, well, you know, we're 1,300 voices. You know, we're 2,000 voices. We're 5,000 voices. And they have to listen to that. They can't discredit that. It's no longer just a couple fringe activists. It is all of the most concerned citizens in the state. And you'd be surprised at how close your ideas are to the person sitting next to you in the audience there. And so when we can say, hey, we've got 900 people that all said the same thing today when we sent out our letter and asked for opinions, the legislature has to listen to that. And the rulemakers say, oh, wow, okay, maybe that's the direction we should go, because these people want to be reelected, they want to be appointed. You know, they, even if they don't like marijuana, they want to know that they are working in the best interest of the people in general. And so that's what's made our organization a success. And so the most important thing that you can talk about when you call in or you write us an email is, how do you want the industry to affect you and your community? Because at the end of the day, that's what everybody really cares about, is how is this industry that's forming, that was, you know, the most controversial part of the campaign, it was, you know, the big marijuana sort of thing. How do you guys want it to shape up? What do you want it to look like? And so we can get up there and talk about what we'd like to see, but our voice is the strongest when we put forward what you guys want to see, you know? And so I would urge every one of you to round up five friends, join our organization, write us an email, give us a call, and let us know how you actually feel about the cannabis industry and how it should affect your community, and we will take your voice forward.
Just to kind of wrap up this part of the presentation, you know, we've been talking a lot about the Marijuana Control Board, statewide regs, you know, what's been going on and down in Juneau, but we are working with our congressional delegation. We've got a congressman, we've got two senators. You know, we all, you know, any of us who are looking to get into the business, we've got some real issues to deal with: IRS rules, banking laws, transportation. That's a unique problem to Alaska. It's uniquely problematic anyway. So we are working with our congressional delegation on those issues. And at the local level, Frank and Brandon are on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Advisory Board, marijuana?
Yeah, it's technically called the Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor's Marijuana Work Group. It's an advisory council. Basically, there's a panel. It's actually a little large to be effective, but at least the cannabis community has been invited to a seat. And we sit around with all the leaders from the community, throw ideas back and forth, and we pretty much represent, you know, what we, you know, have gathered from you guys to say, okay, this is how the, you know, cannabis industry should move forward. And then the council's recommendation that goes to the mayor's office, that goes to the chief of police office, and ultimately goes to the borough and city assemblies, that's what they use as their advisory board to make these decisions. They don't have to side with us, but it seems like they have been. So it's a positive development. And Bruce has actually been invited to the Anchorage Council, haven't you?
Yeah, for those of you who live in Anchorage, you may recall back in November, right after the election, there was an effort to shut down everything marijuana in Anchorage. And we, the industry came out pretty hard against that. We were able to defeat that. Well, one of the results of that was the chair of the assembly, Dick Traney, designated a four-member marijuana committee whose task it was to look at local regulations, ordinances, zoning issues, and advise the rest of the assembly on, what would be practical there. And the chair of that committee, Ernie Hall, was gracious enough to invite me to be an unofficial member of that committee. So I don't have a vote on that committee, but we definitely have a voice in how ordinances will develop down the road. And I've been invited to planning and zoning meetings and to talk to Chugach Electric. Oddly enough, they are very interested in our industry. And they were so informed. It was fascinating. They actually were able to tell me how much electricity it costs to produce a pound of weed. He showed me this chart, and I did a quick number. I'm like, yeah, that sounds pretty close. It was interesting. So, but the fascinating thing about this is that, a year ago, there was so much stigma and so much misinformation. Now we're able to have a rational adult conversation about utility costs and permitting processes and zoning. I mean, we've come so far in the last year, and a lot of it has been through activism, not just through us, but the people that we're representing and other groups that are standing up and presenting a reasonable, rational, adult face for this industry. That's huge. February 24th, probably the best thing that happened to us that day was that nothing happened. Everybody was expecting the sky to fall. APD put 5 extra cops on duty. They arrested one person they didn't even arrest him. They ticketed one person for public consumption. They gave him a $100 ticket and sent him on his way. It was a non-event, and that was the best thing that could have happened to us, because anything dramatic that happens is fodder for the legislator or our other elected officials to use against us. So I would just thank everybody involved for not feeding those negative stereotypes, because it's really working for us. So with that, I'd like to open it up to questions. We've been working very closely with Jana Weltzien of the Rose Law Group. She's been helping us out tremendously on some of the intricate legal details throughout this legislative session. And Jana has volunteered to offer up a wireless mic to anybody who has some questions. So if you got some questions, fire away.
All right. I just want some clarification just to make sure that you said that on HB 59, going back a few slides, that the legislation for the concentrates, it's on November 24th, 2016, instead of 2015 for the regular, plant marijuana legislation, the rules that are due. I believe it was a delay on concentrates, HB 59. I was just looking it up, on Google real quick, and it says that on the text for that bill,
yeah,
it says the rules are due November 24th, 2016. Still correct? I just want to make sure.
That's wrong. No, it's 2015.
Oh, okay. So they're all okay. Good.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They may have a typo on the state's on the legislative website.
Yeah,
but the final rules are definitely due. Well, they're due if under our constitution, the effective date of the bill is 30 days after it was certified.
Okay.
I'm sorry, 90 days. That was February 24th of 2015. Then the state had 9 months. For the rulemaking process, which brings us up to November 24th of 2015. So if it says somewhere November 20, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I just caught up with you. Yes, HB 59, their strategy there was to separate leaf and bud from extracts and edibles. And so, what they were trying to do was say, for the first category, the deadline is November 24th, 2015. For the second category, edibles and concentrates, it's going to be November 24th, 2016. So I just caught up with you. So you're absolutely right on that. But the goal there was to delay as much as possible. Because, here's the strategy. The prohibitionists want to push out implementation as far as they possibly can, because they don't want us to get established as an industry. If they can issue not one permit before February 24th, 2017, that's perfect for them. Then they just repeal the whole thing and they go on their merry way. We're not going to let them do that.
Yeah, you kind of have to hand it to them on HB 59. The way did Representative Seaton package it, it almost sounded like he was trying to look out for the industry, say, hey, let's tackle marijuana flower first and get those rules written, and then we can go on to concentrates. And so I know some of the guy's constituents, he actually tried to placate these individuals, say, hey, this is good for you, this is good for your industry. But really, all that was a complete crock. Yeah. Yeah, and so what that would have done, he knew that the industry is moving towards edibles and concentrate. He knows that they're safe. He also knows that no legitimate, savvy business person is going to want to build their business model about having to discard 30 to 40% of their usable product and lose money on power and ultimately their bottom line. And so he figured if he could get that put through and made it to where there's an extra year that we had to wait to get the concentrates up and running, that all of the commercial processing facilities wouldn't be able to start, our industry would ultimately fail. But we figured that out, and it didn't go anywhere.
You got my
No, it's all, most likely everybody else has similar questions. So
yeah,
roll with it.
Go ahead.
Just follow up is the July 2nd and 3rd. Is that going to be discussed as well? Trying to move that date up.
That is cast in stone. That is actually the meeting date, the next meeting date for the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Board. So that's July 2nd is alcohol, July 3rd is marijuana, and that's going to be in Fairbanks. They move the meeting around the state. They'll do Anchorage, Fairbanks. I think Nome and Cots are expected to be later in the summer, and then back here in Anchorage in November, I think.
And if you go on the ABC website, there's a form that you can fill out, and then you get notifications of everything that's happening, which I suggest everybody do. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, can I add on something you said, Brandon?
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Okay, I just want to make a plug. Brandon was saying every 2 weeks they do a CRC meeting through the phone.
Go a little closer.
Hey, can you speak into the mic, please?
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, Brandon was saying that every 2 weeks they do a CRC meeting. It's a call-in. If you live in Anchorage, you can't be with us on the call-in because we always meet at 7001 Brayton Drive. It's the frontage road, the American Legion, and all the Anchorage folks are there, so you're welcome.
Yeah, and thanks. The American Legion is kind enough to host our meetings in Anchorage, so you can actually show up in person if you want and talk to a real person and put forth your ideas. Thank you.
All right, question. Yes.
Keenan.
Back there.
Keenan.
That is a great question. So the question is, how are the current businesses affecting the rest of us? I can't speak for Cynthia Franklin, but I can tell you what she said publicly. And what she has said is, if there's marijuana involved and you're making money, it's not legal. And if you're doing that, she did get a budget approved of $170,000 for enforcement. So she gets to hire people, which she started doing, and they get to, she has a big hammer to bring down on people to stop them doing what they're doing. And the worst part of that is that she has said very publicly that she would like to see a regulatory structure in place that favors people who did not do that, who did not try and get out ahead of the game. So, and in turn penalizes those who did. Now, I don't want to see anybody get arrested for anything marijuana, and I don't want to see anybody's business disrupted, but the reality is that folks that get out ahead and do anything that draws unfavorable scrutiny on the industry and draws her attention away from the rulemaking process, that's a negative for the rest of us. So, yeah. So the question is, how does that pertain to the medical? What do you guys want to?
Yeah, so Alaska does not have a medicinal marijuana industry. Now, medicinal marijuana has been legal here since 1998, but you have to produce it yourself, and you have to consume it within your home. You can't buy or sell medicinal marijuana, and nothing in ballot measure 2 specified a medicinal marijuana industry. Now, it didn't remove any of the rights and protections that are afforded to medicinal patients, and we want to see that all the medicinal patients are protected, but there is no medicinal industry. You can't sell medicinal marijuana, and so technically medicinal marijuana is at the same place that it was at before. The only difference now is they can't put people in jail for possessing it. So if you know, had a medical card and that card expired, you and your friend are both, you know, medicinal marijuana patients. You can share marijuana with one another. You can gift up to an ounce to each other. You can use it medicinally. But there's no regulatory structure in place for medical marijuana commerce.
It's worth noting that under ballot measure 2 and effective February 24th, you know, you can grow up to 6 plants and you can keep all the bud that you harvest from those 6 plants. So, you know, depending on how good you are at growing, that could be a pretty significant stash, and you can in turn give up to an ounce at a time to a friend as long as they're not paying you for it. You know, so the question is, you know, what about delivery services? Again, I'm just going to try and paraphrase what Cynthia Franklin has said, because she's the enforcement group or the enforcement person, or Bob Beasley is. They don't look favorably on the delivery services. Their attitude, I think, is that, you know, that's essentially trafficking in marijuana and trafficking without a license to do so. You know, so it's a different dynamic than it might have been a year ago. So her attitude is not, you know, we're going to arrest you and throw you in jail. It's more, we're going to arrest you and we're going to either fine you for operating without a license, although there's not yet a fine structure in place, or we're going to shut you down with a threat of legal action, and worse, we're going to make it virtually impossible for you to get a permit next year. So, you know, while I think the delivery services are really cool, I would love to see them, you know, licensed and supported. I mean, it's an essential thing. I mean, I think there's a place for that in this industry, and it should be defined in the regs. But I think it might be a little bit too early for that. I think that you know, patience is going to win the day. And so, you know, so far, I think we collectively, you know, throughout the state, have done a really good job of being respectful of the process. And, you know, Cynthia said, look, I have until November to do to generate these rules. Let me do that. It's hard to argue that. I mean, it's a reasonable request. So, any other questions, comments? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The Marijuana Control Board. So the process that they're in now. So the question was, you know, is the rulemaking process, the process by which you get a permit, being defined now? Yes. It won't be finished until November 24th. So. Right. There is not a draft yet. The schedule that was laid out, culminating in the November 24th rollout date, does anticipate 30 days of public review and testimony for each of the 3 packets that will make up the total rules package. But we won't really know what those details look like until, you know, later in the summer into the fall. What's interesting, you know, I kind of alluded to this earlier, and I'll come back to it. All those bills, that even the ones that never went anywhere, I think are going to drive to a certain extent what the rules look like. For example, one of the bills mentioned a home grower permit. Another one talked about a boutique grower permit, kind of a small grower. the home grower permit kind of would work in conjunction with a broker. So they were trying to create a statutory environment in which small growers could sell their product into a legal, regulated marijuana industry. Now, that bill never went anywhere. But what that does do is it kind of tells us where the legislature is philosophically. And I've made this comment, Cynthia Franklin has made the same comment, that we can expect a lot of those ideas to find their way into the regulatory process. So even though there's 4 general categories of permits defined in the ballot initiative, I think we can expect there to be many more permit types at the end of the day, probably multiple types of growers, multiple tiers of growers, a delivery service, a processor of different types, edibles, bakeries, testing labs, lounges, smoking lounges. You know, Fairbanks North Star Borough wants them. So So the argument would be, well, let's define that in regs, then let the individual communities decide if they want them. So that's kind of where we're going, but we don't have a draft to look at yet. Did that kind of answer it? Did you want to add something to that? Or? Oh, okay. Yeah.
They have not. So the first round of interviews are going to happen Monday here in Anchorage, and then there's going to be subsequent rounds of interviews happening in Fairbanks and the rural communities shortly after. Right now there's about 130 applicants. They've got to whittle it down. It looks like they're going to pick five individuals from each category and then submit those five finalists to the governor for his ultimate selection. Well, hopefully by the end of June. This is correct, yeah. We got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the state has 9 months for the regulatory process. Well, we're now 3 months
burned
into that.
A little bit of it already, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, to be fair, a lot of the work has already been done. Like I said, you know, through the legislative session, there was a lot of discussion. So a lot of key issues have been discussed and agreed to by all parties already. So they're not, that board's going to be super busy, but they're not starting from zero. So, okay, so the question is it going to be lottery or merit-based? You want to take that one?
We're supporting a merit-based system. We see how the lottery system has affected Washington State. And so we see the direction here in Alaska going towards a merit-based system as we think that it should. It's what we heard from several members of the legislature. They haven't decided on that as a body.
But if I may just add, Cynthia Franklin has also expressed a very strong preference for a merit-based system. In fact, I haven't heard anything positive said about a lottery-based system by anybody. So,
yeah, I can tell you that. Yeah, the leadership in the Fairbanks North Star Borough does not want to see a lottery. The borough wants to approach the marijuana industry as a, you know, cash generating business for our community because we rely so heavily on tourist dollars, and a lottery based system doesn't put the individuals who are best suited to run successful tourism businesses in those spots. It just puts whoever. And so if we want to get the industry off on its best foot, we need to put people into those licensed slots that look like they're going to actually be able to pull off a business. Yeah, like a good point system. You know, don't quote me on that, but that's most likely what it's going to be. Yeah, yep.
And in fact, that is kind of what Cynthia Franca has articulated in, you know, to the legislature and to the Anchorage Assembly. You know, she is defined, you know, kind of like, you know, a weighted scoring system where, you know, you get positive points for certain things in your business plan, negative points for others, depending, you know. So, yeah, we would definitely be a, well, we hope, we would expect it'll be a weighted system.
That will help immensely towards a merit-based system, absolutely.
In terms of the actual timeline, I'm not sure, I don't know that I can tell you exactly by what date you need to have it. Because there's a couple of other dynamics at work also. If you're in Anchorage, for example, like I happen to live in Anchorage, the other dynamic is local ordinances and zoning restrictions. I didn't mention this, but the Anchorage Assembly did give direction to the Planning and Zoning Department to go ahead with planning and zoning review. So they are expected by the end of June or end of July to come back to the Assembly with a draft zoning guidelines for marijuana businesses. So there's that to deal with also. And another thing I completely failed to mention is, let's not lose sight of the community councils. You know, we've got a statewide regulatory process, maybe some statutory considerations. The Anchorage Assembly and other communities will undoubtedly have a conditional use permit requirement. And a lot of them, the Anchorage Assembly has already said, they're going to give great weight to recommendations from the local community councils. And so if you're looking at starting up a business, if you have some retail, some property in mind, this would be a really good time to get in good with your community council and just kind of get the measure of where they're at on this. And if you feel that they're on the fence or negative, please let us know. Our plan is to reach out to all those community councils that have commercial or industrial areas within their boundaries and go talk to them. I've already met with mine. And we just want to talk to them and educate them and say, you know, are there any questions? Are you concerned about smell? Okay, there's ways to deal with that. Are you concerned about traffic, lighting, noise, whatever? Those are all legitimate concerns. And I think that with education, we can help put their fears to rest.
Also, our local government in Fairbanks, Alaska, has come up with a resource. It's a survey that we use to decide what people wanted to see the industry developed into in Fairbanks. And if any of you work with your local government to try to establish your local regulations, the Fairbanks North Star Borough is willing to offer that survey to you with your ability to adjust it to fit your local area. So if you are interested in that, find me after this presentation, and I'll guide you to getting that copy of that survey.
And I'd like to add a little more to those individuals who are thinking about going into the business and what the requirements are going to be. Something that has been thrown around in a lot of conversations has been a security plan. If you're thinking about going into business, make sure you have a security plan. That's something that is going to be looked at and scrutinized. A lot of the people who are on the fence about this thing or just don't know a whole lot about it, they're concerned about marijuana security, you know, theft, all the cash that's sitting around. And so that's something that you can use to kind of bolster your business is when you do apply, make sure that you're working with a securities company, that you have some sort of an industry standard plan in mind. That way you'll have a better chance at scoring higher on some said good point system.
We'd like to see it go to a public vote, but unfortunately a city council can decide to opt out of it, and so can a borough government, a rural community. That was part of the initiative.
You know, if I may add to that, the Wasilla is a uniquely good example because that dynamic is playing out right now. If anybody's from the Valley, correct me, because I may be off on this, because the political boundaries out there confound me sometimes. So if I'm not mistaken, it's the Matsu Borough Assembly was considering banning all commercial marijuana enterprises. The assembly voted it down. So the assembly said, no, let's see how the rules play out, and then we'll decide what other zoning restrictions or taxes we need to apply to this. Some folks within the community decided that that wasn't sufficient for them. So there is a move afoot to get a petition to put a referendum on the ballot in October to opt out one or more of the four categories of marijuana businesses. So, you know, the battle's not over. You know, the prohibitionists are still trying to shut us down, you know, at different levels. I don't make them sound like, you know, bad people. They're just, you know, they just have a very different perspective that I disagree with tremendously. But that dynamic is in effect. Now, that was just like so generous, wasn't it? Publicly. You know, the Anchorage Assembly tried to do something similar. You know, there was an ordinance introduced a week after the election, before the election results were even certified, there was an ordinance introduced to ban everything marijuana, ban all marijuana businesses. And we came out, the industry, the community, came out really hard, really public against that. Ultimately, that ordinance failed on a 9-2 vote. And if for those of you who weren't paying attention, what the person who introduced that ordinance and one of the only two to vote for it was Amy Dombowski, whose bid for mayor just train wrecked. So it's impossible to know, you know, how much of an effect that had, but that amongst other things, I think kind of raised questions about her readiness for the top job. It certainly did in my mind. And I'll tell you flat out, I'm Republican. I'm a conservative. I supported her when she ran for the assembly. But when I saw, when I saw that, I said, no, your judgment is a question here. That's a personal perspective. That's not the organization. So it's not, I'm not endorsing or condemning any candidate here. But we do need to remain engaged, at every level. Like I said, we're still working with the legislature. We hope to work with the Marijuana Control Board. We're still engaged with Anchorage and Fairbanks communities, as well as Juneau and Kenai. And we've reached out to, and we do get good reception from a lot of the communities around the state. So we're going to try to continue that and broaden it. So we kind of count on our members to bring us information. One gal emailed me one day and said, hey, Sitka Assembly, they're looking at an ordinance. That wasn't even on my radar, but it's something that we, had to start focusing on. We can't affect every community, but we can try to educate them. One thing we did do very early on, if you haven't seen it, collectively, we produced what we call the CRCL white paper. Early on in the legislative session, we realized that we had a real uphill battle in terms of educating people, because they were trying to regulate and legislate stuff that they didn't understand. Many of them had never seen a mature pot plant. They didn't know bud from keef, from hash oil, to save their lives. I mean, they could Google it, but it was meaningless. So we collectively put together about a 15-page document, which is kind of like weed 101. Like, okay, what is the plant? What are the products? What is the significance? And we threw in a couple of recommendations as well, but it was so well received that the Alcohol Control Board posted it on their website, and that's kind of become the reference guide, or an initial reference guide, for a lot of our elected officials. So, again, it just gave us some credibility. It gave us a voice early on, and a lot of our legislators keep coming back to that document just to, kind of guide the discussion.
Grow stores.
I'm sorry?
Grow stores that supply the fertilizers and picks and shovels.
Uh-huh.
How far can we go in advising people on how to grow, where to get seeds, where to get clones? Are you developing any language?
I have a few friends who are in that industry, and I don't think there's any requirement that says that they can't guide people on a process to grow marijuana, but a lot of them are bound by their supply chain to not discuss marijuana. They've signed contracts, and so because of that, you're not going to find a whole lot of them that are willing to actually coach you through the process. But as long as you're not making money on the transaction of marijuana or on a marijuana group, you should be, event, you should be fine.
I will say that my local go-to store has been a tremendous resource for me.
Mine too.
Being a relative newbie to growing.
I have a question about the pipes and things that we sell. Before, they were tobacco accessories, and we sold them to anyone that was a smoker, 19 and up. And now, is there going to be any kind of enforcement or change in the regulations?
So if you're still selling those as a tobacco accessory, then you can continue to sell them to individuals who are 19 and up. If you market that as a marijuana accessory, you have to make sure that those individuals are 21 and up. So for the time being, I would say that it is best to continue to have those products marketed as tobacco accessories.
So you still can't say bong?
I don't know if you can say bong, or I don't think that's illegal anymore. I mean, I guess you could have a tobacco bong. I mean, I've seen a guy accidentally take a bong hit a Copenhagen once. It pretty humorous.
That's nasty.
I don't think he went to jail.
It's interesting though, because I've kind of talked to some of those store owners, and they've explained to me how, well, we're a tobacco store, we're federally regulated, so we can't talk about marijuana on the premises. They've kind of slacked off on that. Maybe it's just because they've come to know me a little bit more, or because I mean, let's be honest, I look FBI. I'm not very good FBI, but anyway. I don't know if that's just their familiarity, or if there is a perceived change in the legal climate. I honestly, if you're a business owner, I would talk to somebody like Jana. She actually is a lawyer. She knows the laws on this stuff a lot better than I do.
Yeah, she'd give you a way better answer than we could.
Yeah,
sure.
She could probably give you a definitive answer and cite a statute along with it. But I'd say if you're not certain, if your business license is on the line, definitely consult an attorney. first, because we're not attorneys. Yeah.
I have three different questions, actually.
Okay.
First one, I came in a little late. What is CRCL?
That's a really good question.
CRCL is an acronym that stands for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. And we're a group that advocates for the industry. We want to see the industry develop from the perspective of a stakeholder instead of being developed by people who don't want us to exist.
All of you are members of CRCL?
Yeah, we are. We're all board members of CRCL. We're part of the original five founders of the organization.
All right, my next question was, I was wondering what their opinion is on like co-ops and coalitions around this.
Growing co-op or something?
Yeah, growing co-op, you know.
I don't think we can really speak to the collective mindset of all 60 legislators. However, I would say this. If you look at the alcohol regs, Title IV, right, there's 22 different types of licenses described for alcohol. Everything from a bar to a package store to a restaurant to an event like the Beer and Barley Wine Festival. I would hope that there's going to be at least a dozen or more license types defined for the marijuana industry. Delivery services, growers of different types, processors, kitchens, retail stores, smoking lounges. You know, there's a lot, and co-ops. You know, if there's a business model there, and if there's a need in any single community for such a facility, I would say let's try and get that on the radar of the Marijuana Control Board so that they can define the parameters for such a business. If we can, and it's going to help us a lot if those things exist in other states. Colorado is the default reference point for Cynthia Franklin. So if you're kind of wondering, if you want to read the tea leaves and look at where our regs are going to go, look at what Colorado's got, the latest version. That's a good starting point. That's not necessarily where we're going to end up, because they were wrestling with an existing medical marijuana environment. We don't have that that handicap, but it's a good place to start. You know, if you really want to, you know, just, you know, spend a couple nights reviewing and, you know, get caught up on that. But it's a great idea. I think I would like to see as many businesses defined as we think are, you know, should be legitimately licensed.
We were talking about that in the one of the other discussions about, you know, big business is going to come in here sooner or later. You know, sooner or later, you know, they're going to come in and want to capitalize. You know, just like the alcohol industry. Okay, they're going to want to get their piece of the pie. So to protect the smaller guys, you know, we're talking about co-ops and collectives and all.
So if I understand the question, you're kind of wondering where are the huge, you know, multi-state players going to fit in versus local smaller businesses? Is that a fair?
Well, the question was actually where the state was, how the state was viewing a co-op or a collective at this time.
Sorry, man, there's a lot of background noise there.
Right.
You know, honestly, growing co-ops have not really come up in legislative hearings, to my knowledge. It doesn't mean that they can't be defined in regulations. See, the legislature really, the only thing they really only had two things that they had to do. Actually, one that they had to do. That was bring the criminal statute.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.